luxury starts every night with a great night's sleep. Discover the Sleepmaker Luxury Collection. First class sleep, available only at Harvey Norman. Proudly Australian made, the Mayfair and St Regis mattresses are thoughtfully crafted to deliver exceptional comfort, premium support, and the luxury of truly undisturbed sleep. Sleepmaker's latest sleep technology, Q4, eliminates partner disturbance, enhances airflow, and conforms more precisely to your body, so you fall asleep easier, sleep cooler, and sleep deeper, creating the perfect sleep sanctuary in your own home. Because luxury isn't just how a mattress feels, it's how you feel when you wake up. Sleepmaker Luxury, exclusively at Harvey Norman. Shop in store and online.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Thursday, the 16th of July 2026. It's a day where the Australian share market finished flat. That's despite strike action at critical infrastructure at BHP's Port Hedland operations. Around 200 workers walking off the job for 8 hours tonight over pay and working conditions. We'll have the details with Mathan Somasundaram from Deep Data Analytics soon. But first, the ASX has recorded its strongest listing year since 2022, with 100 new entities hitting its boards last financial year. But many were dual listings from offshore seeking to access capital in Australia. The market operator is facing a competitive environment for local IPOs as some companies seek funding from private equity investors or from other global exchanges. And earlier this month, construction company FDC Consolidated became the largest local listing of the year after it raised $400 million. So for more, I spoke with ASX General Listings Manager, James Posnett. James, how would you describe the level of IPO activity on the ASX last financial year, and from what sectors have they been coming from?
Very good to speak to you today. Look, it's been a fantastic year, actually. FY26 was the best year for new listings on ASX since FY22. We had a mixture, really, of pure IPOs. We had 100 listings altogether, which included pure IPOs, but also quite a number of dual listings. So foreign listings, from geographical regions like Canada, US, New Zealand, that have dual listed here to access capital in Australia. So that's been a really good indicator to the world, really, to say, look, ASX is globally competitive and has a lot of capital that can be deployed, not just for domestic companies, but for overseas.
On the ASX and going offshore, to what extent is that a concern?
Oh, look, I think it's a competitive environment that we live in, and competitive in the sense of, yes, global exchanges are looking for listings all around the world. And indeed, NASDAQ did attract Atlassian, which was an Australian company. But can you believe that was 11 years ago? And so, we haven't lost too many Aussie companies to the US since. And that is testament to the quality and depth of our market. Of course, in terms of keeping companies at home, we do want to do that. There's a few things that I talk to companies about on this, which is one of the overriding ones is what is best fit for your company. So look, the US market, for example, is a fantastic market if you're sort of like $20 billion plus company. But you have to be, of serious scale to gain the attention of investors over there and get any sort of traction in the market. Whereas if you're sort of below that $20 billion, Australia wins on access to capital, valuations, particularly in tech, and index inclusion. So if you list here, you can be part of the S&P ASX 200 index or the ASX 300 index. We also do have a tech index as well. If you were to list in the US, the S&P 500 entry point is over $20 billion US market cap. So you can see that, in terms of the actual entry point here is actually much lower. So the entry point to our 200 index, for example, is $1 billion, roughly market cap. So you're getting a lot more attention at an earlier stage and at a more suitable stage for your company. And that applies, as you can imagine, that's a large addressable market. And so the question then becomes, you know, do you list or do you not list?
How do you attract the larger company?
Yeah, well, Canva's very much an outlier. So there are no other unicorns that are above $20 billion in Australia, first of all. So that is really an outlier. What we would say, you know, to companies like that is, you know, also look at dual listing. You know, so that's another opportunity. And in fact, we've seen it in reverse with, you know, overseas companies coming here. So that's absolutely an option for companies like that that maybe are of the scale that they want to go. But there are not any others really in that sort of size profile at this point.
More companies are staying private for longer thanks to private equity and venture capital. How worried are you that these are permanently shrinking the number of Australian companies seeking to list?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and we do get this quite often. We spend quite a lot of time with the venture capital sector and the tech sector generally. And look, a lot of these companies are quite asset light, and you know, many don't necessarily need a lot of capital and can stay a bit private, you know, for longer. But ultimately, what I've observed over the last 10 years is there are just way more companies that need capital and are reaching scale in the tech sector in Australia. So the addressable market is much larger. What we're now seeing are companies that want the benefits of being on the public market. So they want access to capital, liquidity, visibility, which are all enhanced when you go public. And so what I'm trying to say is, yes, sure, some companies are probably better private, actually, in some cases, but others are absolutely suitable for the public market. And we've seen just this month, a US tech company called Aura raised $150 million, $1.5 billion valuation, and listed on ASX. So we are seeing these tech companies come through, and we expect to see more in future.
Just finally, what is the single biggest thing you think the government or regulators could change to make Australia more competitive for IPOs?
Yeah, look, and that is a really interesting question because there's no silver bullet ultimately. And the way, you know, we look at it is, and the reality is, it's actually a lot of incremental improvements over time, you know, that will add up to something very meaningful. So, you know, one lever is not necessarily going to make a difference. But if you do a dozen things or even half a dozen things collectively, that would be meaningful. One example of that is the accelerated IPO process. So we worked with ASIC to introduce that, which really started the start of FY26. And that's been well received by the market. So it's shaved off a really crucial bit of time at the back end of the IPO process. So you could save 1 or 2 weeks at the back end of the IPO process, which is quite crucial for deal execution. So it reduces the execution risk. Now, that's been taken up by quite a number of companies throughout the financial year. And is actually one of the things that has just meant smooth the way in for those businesses to get to market. And we've got a whole load of other ideas like that that we're working through at the moment on the policy side to, again, add up to that really meaningful sort of half dozen or so things that are going to really move the dial.
That is the AIA listings on its real estate website, and profit takers hit some energy names. BHP tumbled 2.3%. More than 200 workers have walked off the job tonight for 8 hours at the company's Port Hedland operations in Western Australia. It's a major supplier of the world's iron ore. Three unions have combined to trigger the action following 6 months of failed negotiations over pay, career progression and recognition of difficult working conditions. A BHP spokesperson told SBS it's eager to keep negotiating constructively for a fair deal. And it comes as the company saw record iron ore production last financial year. And while copper fell a little, it follows a 35% surge in prices for the metal over the past 12 months. It does, however, expect to produce less copper this financial year. So for more on the day's market action, I spoke with Mathan Somasundaram from Deep Data Analytics. Mathan, so the market's down today. How would you describe investor sentiment at the moment? Because aren't they balancing things like the ongoing war in the Middle East, changing interest rate expectations, particularly out of the US, and then the outlook for AI and investment there?
Yeah, there's a lot of balls in the court at the moment. Everyone's juggling a fair bit. You've got geopolitics, you've got US reporting season, you've got inflation worries in a number of places, you've got local budget changes, tax changes, you've got US, Middle East war that's restarted. So there's a fair bit playing out, and a lot of the macro is being ignored, especially the negative side of things. It's predominantly because of the flow in the global markets. But how long that can go on is going to be tested. So we're starting to worry about the economy. And I think the market is now trying to work out we can have a longer term view on thematics like AI, but in the short to medium term, the economy has to deliver. And I think that's where the market is kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. The long term view, everyone is quite optimistic. But in the short to medium term, the economy has to hold up. And I think the economic weakness is starting to come through in multiple countries. And we're starting to see stagflation worries coming through. We've seen a number of countries where there's a fair amount of currency devaluation. So all of these things are starting to worry people.
It's interesting where you're talking about economic concerns. Earlier this week, we saw those economic growth numbers out of China, which show that on an annual basis in the second quarter, the economy expanded by just 4.3%, which was below the government's target.
Probably one of the best. They, run mines that are really low cost. There are issues in production going forward in Chile, and that kind of plays into the copper outlook. Copper prices are pretty high, probably pretty close to all-time highs, where you have to think that that kind of high prices will have a hit on demand. Iron ore prices are below 100, and the Chinese data didn't tell you. I mean, if you look at the Chinese property market, it's still in decline. It's been in decline for a number of years. The hope the market had was China was going to come out with dramatic stimulus to drive infrastructure and housing cycle, which hasn't played out. And I don't think it will play out anytime soon. I think the world is going through a deleveraging cycle. The move by our government to move on tax reform on property is another sign that's playing out globally, that people are trying to deflate their asset bubbles. Because in a deflation cycle, sorry, a deleveraging cycle, you lose control of the overall asset bubble. And that's the worry that everyone has. And China has been basically letting their property market slide for nearly 4 or 5 years. So they moved well ahead of the market. I don't think they're going to be going in and trying to pump it up just before the whole world experiences the same cycle. So in that context, I think iron ore remains weak. BHP had a big bounce yesterday, which is kind of out of bit of reality. So it had a big bounce and actually held the market. That was the reason our market didn't actually roll over. So the pullback today is pretty much giving up yesterday's bounce. So even though it looks like a big move, it's actually not that much. You're pretty much where you were yesterday open. So in context, it's not too bad. I think BHP is still a great miner, still a dominant player. It's just a what first or second stock in our market. But I think the question is going to be is you've got high copper prices. Number of these commodity prices are quite high. So in an environment where most of the growth comes from emerging markets, it's really hard for them to afford these commodities at these prices when their currency is sliding. So it's kind of a multi-pronged attack. So I think it's going to be tough in the short to medium term. But if you look at where we are in the market, everyone paid a lot for growth, and the market is now gravitating to value. So in that context, commodities tend to hold up better. So BHP is caught between getting better commodity prices. At the same time, you've got a slowing global growth. So it's kind of a balancing that two things.
Another interesting story out today, the ASX, the market operator, says it's seen a huge lift in the number of IPOs last financial year from around about 60 to 100. Looking overseas, because isn't there also this threat that a lot of companies are staying private for longer or tapping private equity instead of listing, or if they are listing, while the ASX says that, they've seen a huge rise locally, aren't a lot of them going offshore?
Yeah, it depends on where you're looking at. So it's quite fascinating. I mean, we've got US market trading at 20, 25 year high multiples. So if you're listing on a global basis, global, I guess, market cap to GDP ratio, it's at all-time high. So if you're IPOing, this is a great time. You're going to have really high relative multiples. So it makes sense that we're seeing an elevated IPO market. You would be going in. I mean, we've seen SpaceX, and we're going to see Anthropic potentially coming in. OpenAI is talking about coming in. So in that context, everyone is coming into the peak market. That usually tells you everyone's trying to cash in. Now, most of these IPOs, you had early investors for a number of years who've been sitting there. This is the exit strategy. So for them to get out, you need to go to IPO. You need to get that float. You need the liquidity. So in that context, it makes complete sense. Now, to your question of where do we find growth, it's actually quite tough because over the last couple of years, we've started to pay too much for growth, and we're probably at peak, I suppose, expense for growth. Now, the trick is we've got a global economy that's slowing down. So you really have to balance out what kind of growth you're going to pay for. So everyone is paying for tech, and that's a crowded trade. Everyone is there. I mean, if you haven't worked out the AI is a growth story, you need to get out of the rock. Now, the question being is, I think structurally, the economic recovery cycle in the durable, dependable, staple stuff, that's going to come through. And I think that's where the growth is, where the market is undervaluing. So it's a matter of looking not just at growth, it's what you're paying for growth in sector basis.
Just a question without notice. You mentioned SpaceX there. Overnight, its share price went back to its IPO price, $135, right? A few days after it listed about a month ago, the share price surged to more than 200. So does it surprise you that it's just come back down to earth?
No, not really. It's a complex beast. There's a lot of pieces in it. Some of the pieces, like the AI piece, requires a lot of money, massive amount of CapEx that's gone in. The real money earner is Starlink. That's probably valuation is probably 170 to 100 billion. So, and they only float at 5%. So it was very easy to move this market quite a bit. So I'm not surprised. I think you get the listing, you get the optimism, everyone chases, they want to get in. And then the reality, this is going to take a lot longer than what you think, and it comes off. And then you had the CEO of OpenAI and Mr. Musk on Twitter going at each other, trying to up one each other. So in that context, it just tells you where we are in the market. There's too much optimism. But look, the thematic over the long term will play out. And usually these kind of stories, you get the optimism, reality hits, and then it takes a while for the model to prove itself and then climbs up. Now, if you think about where the big advantage that SpaceX had is the reusable rockets. And China has suddenly come out of nowhere and they have reusable rockets. Funnily enough, they did that after the float. And suddenly you see the competitive advantage now shrinking. It's just like AI. There will be always competitors coming to a market where there's high margin. So I think you just got to be careful here. Don't get carried away. Opportunities are going to come, but look, the next 6 to 12 months is going to be fascinating in this market.
Join the 6:30 weekday edition of SBS World News on SBS. The podcast returns tomorrow. It drops after the market close, and I'll catch you there.
This SBS on the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice, and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decisions.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
Luxury starts every night with a great night's sleep. Discover the Sleepmaker Luxury Collection. First class sleep, available only at Harvey Norman. Proudly Australian made, the Mayfair and St Regis mattresses are thoughtfully crafted to deliver exceptional comfort, premium support, and the luxury of truly undisturbed sleep.
SleepMaker's latest sleep technology, Q4, eliminates partner disturbance, enhances airflow, and conforms more precisely to your body, so you fall asleep easier, sleep cooler, and sleep deeper, creating the perfect sleep sanctuary in your own home. Because luxury isn't just how a mattress feels, it's how you feel when you wake up. SleepMaker Luxury, exclusively at Harvey Norman. Shop in-store and online.